The following audio file was recorded on April 8th in Nashville, Tennessee by Earnhardt Productions Incorporated at a voting rights and election reform conference titled Gathering to Save Our Democracy. It has been uploaded to this site courtesy of the January 30th Coalition, an Ohio-based voting rights group which endorsed the conference. You are welcome to copy and distribute or broadcast this recording. Please also consider making a donation to Radio for All so that recordings like this one can continue to be made available.
To open us this evening, I've asked Reverend Paul Miller to say an invocation. So, Reverend Miller, if you could join us.
For the record, I'm not a reverend, but I will open up with a prayer. Shall we bow our heads? Dear Heavenly Father, we come before you today to thank you for the many blessings you've bestowed upon us. We ask that you guide us through this endeavor. Let us know that it is your will that we're seeking to complete and do, and it is for the best interests of this nation that we've come together to embark upon this important journey. We ask that you guide us. We bring your divine intervention into our midst. Let us know and understand that we want to do just what's right. It is in your name that we pray. Amen.
We're also honored to have Kelvin Jones, who is the head of the Nashville Human Relations Commission and president of the Napier-Luby Bar Association, to give a welcome for the city of Nashville.
Bernie, thank you very much. On behalf of our mayor, Bill Purcell, I want to welcome each of you all here to Nashville. I know that you come from all around the country. And so I thought I'd tell you just a little bit about our city. It is the largest metropolitan area in the state of Tennessee. We are also a capital city. But more importantly, Nashville is a city which has been a catalyst for change. Bernie mentioned that I was the director of the Metro Human Relations Commission. Well, it was back in 1965 when this commission became the first human rights agency of its kind in the state of Tennessee. You will also remember that Nashville was a city, a catalyst for change during the Civil Rights Movement, when we had the student sit-ins here in Nashville. But even prior to that, Nashville also had an opportunity to be a place of change. And that's when the women's suffrage movement took place right here. And it was here in Nashville that women were able to broker the right to vote. So it is quite appropriate that this conference would be here this weekend. So on behalf of our mayor and on behalf of our city, we want to thank each of you for all that you've done and continue to do to both protect our democracy, but even more importantly, to protect one of our most fundamental rights, that being the right to vote. So thank you all, and we certainly hope that you enjoy this weekend.
I'm Bernie Ellis, one of the organizers for our local ad hoc nonpartisan election reform and election justice group Gathering to Save Our Democracy. Tonight represents the 25th gathering that our group has held since December 12th, when we were one of, I believe, 41 states that chose to have people concerned about the sanctity of our franchise show up at their state capitals and make a noise together. So we were pleased to be one of those 41 states on December 12th. We were even more pleased to be singular in our returning to our state capital the next week when the weather felt a great deal like the Ukraine. I think it was 0 degrees on the state capitol steps. And from day one, you notice some of us have on orange ribbons. We wear those at every one of our gatherings to show that one of the oldest democracies can still learn from one of the youngest democracies when it comes to standing up and being heard when the franchise is threatened. So if you're wondering why we're wearing these orange ribbons, we'll be happy to tie one on you out there at the break. This has been an interesting 6 months for the country. And I think the fact that we have at least 26 states represented in this church tonight is a testament to a concern that goes far beyond the boundaries of the state of Ohio to really touch every one of us. And believe it or not, it's been less than 30 days since we made the decision to do this conference. And the nation essentially responded to our suggestion in a big way. So if you are a resident of a state other than Tennessee, would you mind standing for a minute? Great. Welcome again. You know, this is an as politicized a time as we live in. One thing that we've enjoyed as a local ad hoc nonpartisan group is to celebrate the fact that for our many differences in the political arena, all of us can come together of good heart and mind to speak in unison for the necessity of returning to free, fair, and verifiable elections in this country. And our own ad hoc group is proud to have members from at least 6 political parties that have been with us from day one on the state capitol steps. And I think among those of you who've joined us from other states, we've added another 3 or 4 political parties to our 6. So while we might outside the confines of this sanctuary find a large number of things to argue about, we're here for 2 days to focus on the one thing we all can agree on, which is the fundamental necessity to trust our voting process if we are going to be a democracy and something other than name only. So again, I'm pleased that all of you are here. I want to make just a couple of quick announcements. There is at least one national organization, United for Secure Elections, who have a number of members here, and that group would like to get together either for breakfast or lunch tomorrow. And you should see Dan Ashby, and he's helping set up those arrangements. And he's standing there in a blue shirt. So at a break, see Dan, and we'll help set that up. The essence of a grassroots organization is the ability to be flexible. And so today, when we discovered that our discussion groups had been assigned to a closet, 2 locked rooms, and a non-existent room at our local campus, we were able to improvise and I think do well, and the feedback I've gotten from the discussion groups today is that they were worth attending. We are going to attempt to be fairly rigorous in keeping to our time schedule now that we're 30 minutes late. Better late than never, I guess, but obviously those of you who have studied the program know how dense it is, how much we're trying to accomplish in the next day and a half. We could easily spend a 3-day conference focusing just on Ohio. We could spend a 3-day conference focusing on election reform. Instead, we're spending an hour and a half or so on those topics. But we are very pleased to have, I think at last count, 7 videographers here filming the conference. We're very pleased that our local team is going to be providing us the audio and video that we will be web streaming as quickly as possible to let the country hear what we're going to talk about tonight and tomorrow. We are still here to serve you if you have needs as an out-of-state visitor. check with one of us with an orange armband. And do we still have rooms at the hostel or beds available there? Are we full? Don't know. Okay. We do have a local church offering us beds at $3 a night. So if any of you came in town very late and don't have a room, you don't have to sleep in Hadley Park. We can take care of you. So again, see one of our volunteers. I very much appreciated Kelvin Jones' comments about the history of Nashville and of Tennessee in the protection of our right to vote. And we thought we'd open this evening by framing what we're here to do in some history. And this is a fairly significant time. We are at that point where we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the passage of the Voting Rights Act. And someone informed me when we first floated the idea of the conference that tomorrow represents the 140th anniversary of the end of the Civil War. So the changes that we've gone through as a country have been profound. If we don't take control of the franchise again, I fear for the changes yet to come. And so all of us are here, I think, in unison to take our country back. And there's no time too soon to do that. We are very fortunate to have as musical counterpoints to our first several speakers, and I will be taking my glasses off regularly, Zarna Surti, Mary Catherine Moore, and Anne Murray Gideon, three best friends who are high school seniors at Franklin Road Academy who've been singing together since the seventh grade. And we would like to ask them to get us started in song. And they're going to sing us two more songs. Dr. Kimbrough and Dr. Grant, if you could join us up front. And is Reverend Dixon here? I'd like these three panelists to come forward. We've asked Dr. Kimbrough to speak first, followed by Reverend Dixon, and then Dr. Grant. If y'all want to grab a seat back here. And we've asked all of these gentlemen to again help us frame the history of how much time and energy, blood, sweat, and tears it takes to both win the franchise and, I guess in our case in 2005, to win back the franchise. So Dr. Kimbrough, I'd like to start with you.
Thank you. I want to thank Bernie Ellis and the people who have been in the trenches for putting on this conference. It is amazing what a few and faithful people can do, and I want to acknowledge a great contribution to our country, not just our community. One of the problems, and I understand I have 10 minutes or less, one of the problems that Baptist preachers have always had, seemingly they are not able to tell time well.
Given that fact, I better grab the water.
Ladies and gentlemen, sisters and brothers, it has been a long road, and getting to vote and having the vote takers accountable to the voter. I am to give, as I understand, a little historical perspective to voting reform, and so forth. In the arena of human history, we have always had people who made choices. Some would take the high road and some would take the low road. We see in the era of election reform, people taking the high road as being those persons such as represents this conference who believe in including people for the worth of their citizenship. People who look beyond color, look beyond class, and do what has become known to mankind as doing the right thing. That's pretty hard to define for some people. Personal interest, group interest, get often in the way of doing what we know to be right. But be that as it may, the high road and the low roads are still there. It was my privilege to have attended so many areas and concerns of human rights as it relates to voting. The group was singing there, I almost found myself wanting to go back to Selma, Alabama, to again do the Selma March, because I am convinced that we shall overcome. And it will be people with minds such as are represented here tonight that will bring us to that point. When we went to Selma, we went in 1965 because there were people there who were excluded from the area of voting simply because of the color of the skin, no other reason. The low road people took the position that since these people of color outnumber people in the majority race nationally, these people are majority in a number of counties in Alabama, in Mississippi, in Tennessee, if you please. So we must find some way to exclude them, and disenfranchisement is one of the ways of doing it. Not only was it done in Alabama, it was done in Tennessee. history, if you please. In the state of Tennessee, we have an area known as Tent City, where black people became so determined to vote that rather than be denied just to register to vote, if people deny you the right to register, what will they do when you are registered and then become eligible to vote? So to prevent that, you say you must not even be registered here. So in order to see that that process came about, sharecroppers were willing to get off of the farm of the landlords and say, well, if we can't vote, we will build our own tents. And we'll have a tent city. It became known as Tent City, but we will and are determined to vote. I went to Tuskegee. And Tuskegee, believe it or not, is in Macon County where the whole state disenfranchised the NAACP. The NAACP has been, is, and should be a force that comes to grips with the notion of equality in all aspects of life. So in Macon County, rather than allow minorities, African Americans, to vote, they used a system of gerrymandering. And as small as Macon County is, there was a 28-sided figure, an unimaginable configuration, so that it went in and out and around the houses of black people to get them off or keep them off of the voting roll. So it's been a long road. I had the privilege, again, I've been here and there a little bit, of working, spending my summer, a major portion of my summer in 1967 in southeast Missouri. Incidentally, Rush Limbaugh is from southeast Missouri. People wanted to vote, but did not have the leadership to steer them through the process. So the NAACP nationally took on a project, had as its project in 1967, the voter registration of blacks mainly in southeast Missouri. So this is a little of the history of the effort to see that the voting process works. We're told in this country that vigilance is the price of freedom. So those who do not wish to be disturbed need to know that we will be vigilant and that we are determined to see the process through. So we say, walk together, children. Don't get worried, and don't get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the Promised Land.
This little light of mine, first of all, I want to thank the young ladies for that song, and part of what I want to talk to you about is a little bit that has to do with that that song. But first of all, I want to acknowledge Reverend Thomas. I always figured there'd be some kind of way to be in Reverend Thomas's pulpit, so that's probably the reason I'm here today, to be able to stand where he stands. But give thanks for the fact that he has once again opened up his doors. And when we look at voter empowerment and when we look at the struggle, we have to look back to men like Reverend Thomas, and we have to look back to the church, and in particular to the black church. My earliest remembrance about the struggle and issues around civil rights and about voting, I can remember I was a little bit too young to really be an active participant, but I remember one night that Reverend James Lawson and some other people had come by our house. We lived about two blocks from this church. And they were talking about the movement that they were getting ready to go, and that they were going to ultimately carry some young people, and that they were going to be arrested. And when they were arrested, they had to find out ways to be able to get those people out of jail. Nobody was going to bond them, and they didn't have the kind of money, and they were trying to find people who were property owners who would be willing to put their property up so that those young people might be able to get out of to be able to get out of jail. My father owned some property, and the conversation was to him that he had a moral responsibility. One, the fact that they had these young people who were coming from Fisk. He had, in fact, attended Fisk. But also that these people, in a part of living out who it meant to be in community and what it meant, that all of us had to make some kind of sacrifice so that the movement might be able to continue. And I remember him saying that they could be able to count on him to do his part. That part, and that part of the community, dealt with the fact that there were ways that we had to find to empower people and give them dignity. See, voting in and of itself is just another one of the things of where we had gone and where we have people who had been deprived of so many things that as you listen to and as we put within the framework of what it meant to be a man, what it meant to have the responsibility, what it meant to be a productive part of the citizenry, meant that you had to do and you had to have certain things. And so that was my earliest exposure. And as I began to move on and as I began to look at it, it was always a very holistic approach. And if there's anything that I come to say that as we move toward and as we continue to look at this issue, is that we've got to move back to the holistic part of it. That it just can't be a movement of where we go out and we register people. It's not about simply just disenfranchisement so that we can move people, but it is about going in and dealing with their issues and giving people a sense of value and their participant and being participant within the community as a large. The church did that. The church dealt with all kinds of issues for that person. And so if we are going to sustain any kind of movement, if we're going to really address the critical issues that any kind of movement like this brings about, then we've got to deal with people from a very holistic standpoint. And if there's anybody who is in our society that we have turned our backs on, it has been young black men. We have brought, and we have brought drugs. We've gotten them hooked on drugs. We're putting them in schools where they have been devalued, where they have no expectations. And so a part of this whole idea of disenfranchisement and a part of the work that I worked with within the NAACP and with other organizations was saying that as we look at all of their issues, then one critical part of it is saying that we value you and we value your opinion. and so that we move in working toward that particular effort. I am shocked that in our struggle of trying to fight for our particular issues that we have forgotten about the human aspect and the individual in the part of the process. The religious right and the Republican Party have taken the model of the black church and have worked it to their advantage. They bring folk in. They bring them not in and saying that we need for you to register so that you can vote for the Republican Party. They bring them into their churches. And they give them a set of core values, and they say, this is how you will affirm who we say that you are in order for you to have human wealth. And so if there is an effort and if there is a movement that does not undergird them as individuals and empower them as individuals and move them beyond the point of where we just need them for their votes, because they're not going to respond. I've been in many a movement where we registered folk and we had their names, and then on election day, they don't show up. And they don't show up because we haven't showed up in the aspects of their lives so that we keep connected to the point that we can abreast them of the issues of why it is important for them to be able to go out and vote. Successful movements, successful campaigns, have always been built around how we value folk. I said when the young ladies were singing the song, that one of the parts and one of the songs that we all have come and we're singing the songs of the movement, but one of the songs that they refused to change in the movement was "This Little Light of Mine." They took all the rest of them and they made it "we." We shall overcome. We will do these kinds of things. Sometimes when you get the "we" part of it, you get lost in it. And you expect somebody else to step forward to do it. Well, if we just go and vote. But when you say "this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine," it gives you some responsibility to make it happen. Successful, empowering campaigns value the person so that they know that by voting, their light shines. As we move forward, as we come back, we've got to let people know that they are part of the process, and that whether or not they are on the winning side or not is not important. What is important is that they have let their light so shine. So as we move through this, and I applaud those persons who have brought us together, who have allowed us to have the conversation, but if the conversation is ultimately not about the individuals that we reach out to, then this campaign will not be successful, because somehow they don't see what it is that they get out of it. But if they get out of it respect and a dignity and the opportunity to let their light so shine, then I guarantee you, then we will be successful, because what we have done is that we have reached out to our brothers and sisters, and that we have moved them from the place of being disenfranchised and marginalized to a place of where we respect them and honor them for who they are. So I applaud our efforts. We have a lot of work to do, but this is not about a party. It is not about a doctrine. It is about individuals being valued for who they are. And if we believe that, and if the persons that we come in contact with, so they've been in a judicial system that mistreated them, they've been in a place where they have been incarcerated and their rights were taken away, if we work to restore the right, what we are ultimately doing is working to restore the individual. And I am just naive enough to believe that the things that I'm working in and the political agenda that I have, then they will embrace that agenda, because it ultimately becomes an agenda that is about human dignity. So our power, our work is all centered in the process of letting those persons say this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Y'all got some talent, you know that? Y'all got it going on. Good evening, everybody. I'm going to ask everybody in here to do me a special favor. Grab the person's hand sitting next to you and repeat after me, please. Grab somebody's hand and repeat after me. Are you ready?
Amen.
Say to that person, I am so glad, to see the face of a real patriarch. Give yourselves a round of applause. First, I want to thank this man sitting to my right, Mr. Bernie Ellis. Come on, everybody, stand up. Come on. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It takes visionary leadership. It takes total dedication. And it takes someone who can not just talk about patriotism, but who really puts their life on the line every day. This is a great man in our midst, and we all should tell him one-on-one, thank you, Bernie. We love you. God bless you for what you're doing for our country. Thank you so much. Next, I've got to, Reverend Sonny Dixon made reference to him, but you all, the reason we're in this church is anytime a major issue, a social issue confronts our community, if it's controversial, it's often difficult to find a venue. No matter how controversial the issue, Everybody in this city knows that if you need a forum to do God's work and good work, you just need to call Reverend Tex Thomas. Y'all give him another round of applause. Love you. And I've got to do this. This is in the African tradition. But the person who took me to campaigns from the time that I was 9 forward, the person who went door to door in the housing projects, registering people to vote, and the wisest teacher I've ever met in my life is my mother, Miss Verlyn Grant. Please put your hand up. My friends, Dr. Charles Kimbrough, my mentor, said it well. I'll give you the quote. John Curran in 1790 said, "The condition upon which God hath given liberty to man, and may I add woman, is eternal vigilance." How right he was. I'd like to pose three questions in the context of our discussion about how to reform elections and save our democracy. Question number one, my friends, is this: why should we care? You would think in a city this large, in a country with this many voters, that you could not get in this church tonight. Why should we care? The next question is, how much should we care? And the third question is, how do we connect with historical precedent? How do we protect that which we should care so much about? My friends, let me say this to you, and I really appreciate all of you who've worked so hard with Bernie, but we can't afford to fail. It's not an option. We've got to run elections, and when they're over, the people have to know beyond a reasonable doubt with clear certainty that their votes were recorded and counted in exactly the manner that they intended. Democracy is not something we can play with. It's not a partisan game. There is nothing in our country, in our history, more sacred. Nothing has caused more blood to be shared than for those who wanted freedom and democracy. We have no option. We cannot fail. But if we do, we give future generations the right to point the finger, the accusatory finger at us, and to say that it was under your watch that you allowed a few unscrupulous thugs to rob our nation of one of its most sacred treasures, our democracy. We cannot fail. You know, Paul Miller, who works for me, the guy who opened with the prayer, gave us a lot of fantastic research, my friends. And I was just amazed when I studied all the folk who own voting companies in America. I was amazed at how accurate they can be in other industries. Why, Diebold gives us the ATM machine. Now, I can just imagine what Americans would do if they asked for $50 and the machine said, "I'm going to give you $25, there aren't many of us who would be satisfied. If Diebold can make an ATM machine to count our money accurately, they could also make a machine that could count our votes accurately and do it with honesty. I want to take this time to publicly thank Congresswoman Tubbs Jones and Senator Barbara Boxer and Senator Clinton. My friends, I know you are the organizers. I know you are the ones who have a passion for democracy. But if you really love what we're doing, please commit to adding 20 or 30 people to your fellowship and have them call every member of Congress and say, "We will have a paper trail. It's not negotiable. We want to know what's happening in these voting machines. We've got to give them the support in Congress." My friends, If I seem a little angry, it's righteous indignation. So many people have given so much. This is nothing to play with. We must really, really fight this fight until every vote is counted the way it should be counted. May I please, with your patience, kind of lay out very shortly, Bernie, what I think would constitute the highest standards for our voting in this country. The first thing, my friends, we must insist on an ATM accuracy count. It's doable. Diebold can tell you that. The second thing, my friends, there should never be overvotes or undervotes that go undetected. These are standards. The next thing, the voter should be able to independently verify that the ballot is exactly what he or she wants before they push the button and cast the vote. I see Larry English there, the great data man. Good to see you, Larry. The fourth standard, and this is so incredibly important, my friends, there should be triple redundancy or whatever it takes to assure that the count, no matter how many times you go back and count, you come up with the same number. As simple as that. You don't have to be afraid of electronic voting. India voted 500 million people. If that country that is a lot poorer than us and is just learning about democracy, if they can use a DRE and vote and get it right, we in America can do the same. The next thing, my friends, from the voting booth to the precinct counter to central, and this is pivotal, we have to insist on the highest levels of security. We should make it where nobody can tamper with these machines without the local folk there at the precinct level knowing it. Whatever kind of alarm needs to go off, let it go off. There should be no way again in the future that someone can hack into these machines or somewhere remotely count these votes or tabulate or mess with these votes without the folk at the precinct level knowing about it. My friends, the last thing is we, the people of this country, must constantly talk to people about why democracy is important. It's not just some flippant notion that it is somehow better than some other form of government. Democracy is about the will of the people, and the will of the people is superior. Why? Because no one of us is as smart as all of us. We got to keep our democracy, and the only way to do it is to fix our electoral process. I'm ready to wind down now, Bernie. I was up at 3 o'clock this morning, you all. I'm Catholic. And we buried a truly great man. But why did so many people, Catholic, Muslim, Buddhist, Protestant, all races, why did so many people admire this man? I'll tell you why. We didn't all agree with him on every position. We loved and admired Pope John Paul II because he was a champion for the cause that he believed in. His cause was something that lifted people up. Our cause today is also one that can lift people up. And don't be afraid if religion creeps in to this struggle. Reverend Tex will tell you that the church was the headquarters for our civil rights movement. I was happy to see these young, beautiful singers do that song because it fits. But did you all know that the founding fathers, when they were trying to put the final touches on the Constitution of the United States, finally in their argumentation and debate, reached an impasse where they could no longer agree on salient points. And one of them said, "Please, let's stop and go down on our knees and pray for guidance." When they came up, my friends, they gave us the greatest document for freedom ever known in the history of the world, called the Constitution of the United States of America. We don't mind religion coming in. Because when religion comes in, folks start to try to get it right. So for that reason, I'm going to close by asking you to join me in a little pledge. And this is nothing that you should be afraid of. I'll tell you what's in it before you raise your hand, if you don't mind. I'm going to simply ask you to help me with these words. Each time we'll go higher and higher. It goes like this. The sovereign will of the people shall prevail. I'll say it again and again, but I'm going to say for those of you who believe that we end with so help us God. Everybody on your feet, please. Raise your right hand, my friends. The sovereign will of the people shall prevail. The sovereign will of the people shall prevail. The sovereign will of the people shall prevail. So help us God. Thank you very much.